Have you ever felt like the way you were raised has left you with scars that impact your relationships and self-esteem? Well, that's what we're talking about today with our guest, Coach Janet. Janet Hayes will be here. So stay tuned. We are live streaming right now, so drop your comments below and let us know where you're streaming from. Welcome back to the Empath and Narcissist Podcast, where I share messages about spiritual healing from narcissistic abuse with human design. Because I believe your karmic experience has awakened you to your authentic soul, you just need the map to call your power back. I am your host, Raven Scott, and I'm an author and trauma-informed spiritual mentor. You know, not all of us have had a loving and supportive childhood. And if you've experienced childhood trauma that led you to believe that narcissistic abuse was a normal way of loving, then you're not alone. Today, we are talking with Janet Hayes, our guest today. And she has spent 30 and a half years married to a negative narcissist, and she didn't even know that she was. Just like most of us, we have no idea we're in narcissistic abuse, and she was in it for over 20 years. The challenges of her upbringing made her the perfect fit for this level of mental and emotional abuse because she learned that her needs were not important. So she can relate to you today, and I can't wait for her to dive into this. We're going to talk about healing from complex PTSD and its slow process. So welcome. Welcome, Janet.
Thank you, Raven. I'm excited to be here today.
Yes. So I want to hear your story. We have so much to cover, childhood and a narcissistic abusive relationship. And then we'll get into the topic of CPTSD. So take it away from the top.
Okay.
We had talked about like you not feeling safe traveling because we're getting to know each other before pre-record. So that'd be a great segue too, right? Safety in your childhood.
Okay. So, my trauma actually began before I was born, and I've been excited to be on here. Now I'm crying.
Oh.
But that's just part of who I am. Yeah. About a month before I was born, my dad left for Vietnam and going off to serve his country. And he chose to enroll in the Army rather than get drafted. And he was trained as a mechanic, phenomenal mechanic. And, you know, that's stressful. My mother was 8 months pregnant and had an 18-month-old to take care of. Mm. And then that was in April of 1966. Around April 20th, 27th, it was April 27th. My mother's mother died after an extensive long illness. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't eat. She ate baby food because she couldn't digest it. You know, she was probably about 10 or 20 years behind on medical advancements. Mm-hmm. And the doctors couldn't help her. So that's, you know, she died. And so my mother had an older sister who had had hepatitis. So she was very limited. And then she had two younger brothers, a younger brother and sister, about 12 and 15 years old, at home with dad, that my mother now had to take care of. And she had an 18-month-old. And then, 10 days later, she has a baby of her own. Mm-hmm. And I cannot imagine how difficult that would be. These are the days before Prozac. And you just had to muscle through. And and I share the story not to blame anyone, but this is just what happened. And this is the story I grew up with. And so this was normal. And then other things happened. My dad came home in November. And on February 14th of 1967, their divorce was finalized. Mm-hmm. And my dad got custody of my sister and I. And he had been out of he wasn't even a part of my life for that first 8 months. Well, not 8 months, but about 6 months, 6, 7 months. Mm-hmm. And then,
so how old were you when he got custody?
9 months old.
9 months. That's really rare, don't you think? Usually they favor the mother.
Especially back in the 1960s.
Yeah.
But there were other things going on.
Okay.
And part of the evidence that was submitted in court was a picture of my backside. I had diaper rash from the middle of my back to the back of my knees, just solid diaper rash.
Okay.
And it's like, oh, that's, you know, you just grow up with a story and that's that. But, and I didn't think of it so much when I had my son, except when he was 9 months old, I thought how devastated I would be if he was taken away from me.
Right.
And now that I have nieces that have babies and I'm a little bit more removed, I think, oh my gosh, we would never let any of my nieces allow that to happen. And I've got a stepsister. It's so funny because her kids have orange hair, the color of mine, like it used to be, you know, before this chrome starts coming in. And I know those babies have sensitive skin. And those babies are happy because they don't have diaper rash because she's a good mom. I was not blessed with that. And my aunt, when I was 50 years old, I was over 50 years old, and I go home, see my parents, go down to see my aunt, because my dad's older sister took care of my sister and I during the day when dad was at work. And she told me, never heard this before in my life, that she stopped by to see Nancy and I when dad was gone. And I had this big bump on my head. And mind you, this is before I was 8 months old, before I was 7 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, and my mother was off doing something, and she says, oh, what happened to Janet? She's got a bump on her head. And my mother says, oh, she fell off the couch. And my aunt says, and there you were, propped up on the couch, ready to fall off again.
Mm.
And the other thing she told me, this is so funny. And she says, and then every time you would cry, Nancy would run to the fridge and get your bottle and feed you. And that was my job. 50 years later, she still miffed at my older sister for feeding me the bottle when I was a baby.
Oh, dear.
Right.
And she could have just said, okay, thank you so much for your help. It's now, it's mama's turn. Like, there's so many different ways you can handle that. But she didn't have control, maybe.
Well, Aunt Evelyn, all of her kids were a little bit older than us. And so I was her last little baby.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to hold the baby and feed the baby and, you know, have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And she always would tell my stepmom, now Janet has a birthday coming up, you know. Didn't do that for Nancy, but always for me.
Mm-hmm.
But what that told me is that my 18-month-old sister was taking care of me.
Mm-hmm.
In that home with our mother. That's
you said 18 month old.
Yes. Nancy's 18 months older than I am. So she was between 18 months and, you know.
I have two girls 20 months apart, and I can totally imagine that, and also imagine how ridiculous that would be if I just had my baby take care of my baby.
You could imagine the baby helping you take care of the baby.
Yeah.
But not being the one to always go to the fridge. So I guess it's my sister's fault that I had that bad diaper rash because she wasn't changing my diapers well enough, right?
Apparently, yes. We're going to blame someone. Let's blame the 18-month-old baby.
That's right.
18, you know, one-year-old.
Yeah. But this is the story I grew up with. And so it was normal.
Right. It was just kind of all normalized.
Yeah. And it's like you always hear it. It's, you know, the thing it is. And then when I was 5, my dad remarried. And so before I was 6 years old, I had 3 primary caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
I had my mother, then I had my aunt, and then I had my stepmom. And that first 1,000 days of life, basically till you're 3, is critical. And in that first, you know, what is it? six times, 180 days, I had a lot of trauma. And being in that kind of pain and not being fed when you're needed and not being clean, that causes changes in the brain. And it affects the way you think about yourself. And I never understood why, but I always felt shame and guilt. And shame, we know guilt is like, oh my gosh, I've done something bad. But shame is when you are bad. And I always felt that I was bad. And I was always afraid of doing something wrong, always afraid of getting in trouble. Even now, you know, I work with wonderful people. And I'm always afraid of making a mistake. And that is a reflection of me. It's getting a lot less. But being that we're mammals, we are programmed to bond to and love our mothers, because they're the ones that keep us alive. And if mother doesn't love me, well, there's something wrong with me.
Right.
And I had that very intensely and solidly programmed into my mind that first 6-8 months of my life, that there was something wrong with me. And then my family's crazy. My dad married my mother, obviously. And then my dad's brother married my mother's sister. So we have complex things going on. And then growing up, they lived a mile down the road from us. And then my dad marries, doesn't tell my stepmom that his ex-wife's sister lives down the road. A mile down the road.
Okay. I'm trying to like follow all this. Yes, exactly. Okay.
There's a lot. But yeah. Dad's sister told my mother's sister one night, and sometime after the divorce, my mother moved across the country with her new husband. And somewhere along the way, my aunt Evelyn, who took care of us, told my other aunt that Janet cries herself to sleep every night. And that all of these messages told me that I'm not worthy and that the world is not safe. And I used to work at our local Super 8, and this guy would come in about every month, and he came in on the night that I worked, so kind of got to know him. And then he didn't show up one month and comes in. It's like, where were you last month? He goes, oh, my wife and I, we were spent 3 weeks in Europe and blah, 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 and told me Paris and all these wonderful things. So this is a man that I have a very professional relationship. I see him 10 or 15 minutes, you know, 3 to 5 minutes when he comes and checks into the motel where I work. So this is what I said to him, to tell you how afraid of the world I am. I said, so if I'm, and this, at this point, I had it in my mind that I wanted to leave my husband, but I was working 2 nights a week at a motel. I knew I couldn't support myself and my son on that. So I knew I wasn't ready to leave, but I knew I was going to. So I said to him, so if I'm ever in a position to go to Europe, can you come with me? Can you like plan the trip? It's like, bring your wife too. But I was so afraid and didn't know what to do that I wanted this guy that I knew to bring his wife and go on vacation with me so he could keep us safe. I mean, is that not ridiculous?
That just makes me think, though, like a lot of us, I can relate to that. Like when I first meet someone, I always thought it was because I was naive or gullible, but like I immediately just kind of trust them. Like you're like, I only knew him every once in a while, 15 minutes, but somehow maybe the situation we're in is so bad that any random stranger is helpful and better at the time. I don't know. What do you think?
He had confidence.
Yeah.
And he knew how to do it. And it's funny how you say that, because I have a friend who works in real estate. And you know the raised ranch? She always would call those a decision house because you walk in the door and you have to decide to go upstairs or downstairs. And it occurred to me that that's how I judge people. Nobody is on my playing level. Nobody. And when I meet somebody, unless I know you're down there, you're always up here.
And I thought, that is so true.
Don't you put everybody up here and everybody goes up here? And then
and
all
the filter immediately, like there's no screen door, there's no filter, they're just up there.
Open the door and upstairs they go.
Yeah.
And then once you get to know them, I just think it's like, well, why did I have you way up here? It's like, you're a lot closer to me if even here. And sometimes it's like, wow, I have skill sets that you don't have, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is not good. This is not useful.
It's almost like it has to relate back to how we formed our view of ourself in childhood. Right?
We're
not worthy, right? Everyone else knows better. They're smarter than us. They're up on the pedestal. And it's kind of like sometimes you kind of wonder why that's like that.
Yeah.
It's from childhood.
Yeah. And it's like I always knew I wasn't smart enough. And I grew up in Eastern Oregon, very small community. We lived out on a farm, a ranch. And I always felt like I had to be smarter and I wasn't smart enough. And I remember one boy, this first grade, and why I still have this memory, I don't know. But we had a coloring page to do. And this one boy colored his whole page, scribble color, all solid black, thick, waxy. And it's like, that's ugly. How can he be smarter than me? And color an ugly black, you know? Mm-hmm. And you got this constant judgment and you don't feel safe to just accept. And that is exactly why I was so attracted to my husband. And, you know,
first you put him on a pedestal, right?
Yes. So I don't know what we did, but, you know, sometime we're out like, he's telling me about that he knows stars. And
he talked to you about stars, like space stars.
Mm-hmm. So he knows he's okay. And see, and I thought when I saw your husband, it's like, oh, he's too smart. He's like probably partially on the autism spectrum because of that high intelligence. And
right, like yeah.
And so my narcissist he told me, it's like, when I was in high school, I had the first 100 stars memorized in order of magnitude, which means I knew the brightest down to the 100th brightest in order and all their names and where they're at. And I'm like, wow. And now that I have some experience, I'm like, wow. Who does that?
Yeah.
This, and you're letting that out of the bag? You should not be telling people that, because that somebody's aware, they can go, whoa, not good.
Yeah.
And so and I was constantly in this people-pleasing mode. Mm-hmm. And that became because I was always trying to please my mother, I think. And, you know, when you have this severe diaper rash, every time you wet or mess your diaper, obviously crying, and with the red sensitive skin, it was a mess. So I was always crying, I suspect, and I'm afraid of anger, or I have been. And I believe, I have no evidence of this, I have no proof of this, but I believe that she was often angry at me because I am so afraid. I have spent my life being afraid of other people's anger. And through this work that I'm doing, I'm not so much anymore. And it's really powerful. And to learn how to work with a narcissist and to like say nothing and I don't need you to respond to him is so powerful. But went to see this friend. And so I'm always trying to figure myself out. I'm always trying to be better. Everything in the marriage is my fault.
Right. All the classic signs of the narcissist and empath kind of dynamic, right?
And we didn't grow up with any psychology or anything, and that's all woo-woo and that's all crazy. And when I was working with a developmental therapist, because my son had speech delay, because he was in the hospital when he was like a year old with a collapsed lung.
Okay.
The gal that I was working with told me that I need to make an appointment to see Dr. Jared down in Clarkston. It's like, oh, is he a pediatrician?
Oh.
And she says, no, he's a psychologist. And I'm like, I don't need one of those. Those are for crazy people. My child's not crazy. 17 years ago this month, we started seeing Dr. Jared every week. And I cannot tell you how much I love that man.
Mm.
He is phenomenal and has helped my son so much. He's helped me so much. But that was our mentality. So I was stepping way out of the box, getting this book on guerrilla warfare. And it was about relationships. And it's like, don't do personal attacks. I was like, well, I don't. But it's like, oh, that's what I get all the time. And that's the only thing I remember out of that book right now.
Right.
But everything was a personal attack. It wasn't the situation. It was always me. And I was always bad. So go on this road trip and we stay with my friend. And she had just bought a house. And she's single, never been married. And we're talking one night. And she slips me a $100 bill. And tells me to put it in my shoe. And it's like, it's like, why? So we had gone to this thing, and like I told you where we live, out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're down in this kind of big city, and there's all this traffic, and then there's construction in the traffic, and we got to get on the freeway to go to this thing that he wanted to go to. And so I'm trying to, you know, backseat drive, help watch for traffic and get in the right lane, because it was kind of confusing, at least for me. And he just goes off screaming at me. And I just shut down. And it was after that, I didn't even tell her about that.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, and I'm still, huh? Why would I need a $100 bill? She goes, well, in case you need to leave, you've got enough money for a motel room for one night. Back when $100 could get you a motel room for one night.
Right.
She wanted me to be safe, and I didn't even know what she was talking about.
Right.
And that was the first clue. That's when the light kind of began to come on. I was like, oh, even though I'd read these books, like about the guerrilla warfare and don't do these things and John Gottman and several of his books. And I remember reading about his love lab in Seattle, and it's like, oh yeah, that would be scary. I wouldn't want to be stuck with him for a weekend in this little tiny studio apartment where you've got the living room, kitchen, bathroom, and bedroom. And it's like that heart monitor. I mean, I would be the whole time.
Yeah.
And so I started meeting other people. One gal, phenomenal. She suggested I go to this workshop. And in doing these things and learning these things, I loved to tell my story of how I am a victim of this horrible, evil narcissist. And I got really angry when somebody brought it to my attention that it was my choice. And it's like, what? No, I am the victim. Poor me. And when I turned that around, that was the beginning of healing. It hasn't changed what's happened to me.
Yeah.
But it has changed how I look what has happened to me. And I know this sounds a bit dramatic, and I know in your recent book, The Empath and the Narcissist, you talk about these Disney stories and fairy tale stories. But I feel like I was thinking about this last night, and it's like I feel a bit like Sleeping Beauty sans the prince. I had to wake myself up. I had to fight the dragons and the briars just to find me. And now I am finding me, and I'm loving the treasure that I'm discovering as I come back to me and come back to the light. And it's a process and it's a journey, and it's worth every bit of struggle there is. Because after I began this process and learning these things, and I think I'm kind of dense some days because I just like, huh? And it's like, oh, yeah, I guess that probably wasn't a good thing to have happen. But as these things happened, one day, and this sounds so pathetic, but one day I laughed. I was like, oh, it had literally been years since I've laughed. And, people say stuff and you think about it, and this is like totally boiling the frog in cold water.
Well, that's what I was going
And
to ask you. Like, CPTSD, how does that happen? But that is it. Like, you are in the relationship and situation, especially with a narcissist. It is like the frog in boiling water. It's a slow process.
yes, and you are conditioned to believe that you're not worth anything more. And because I've thought about that, it's like, and this friend of mine gave me the $100 bill. It's like, she wanted to put up with this crap. And there's little things that I compromised with on from day one. And one thing is I wanted him to ask my dad for permission to marry me, and he refused. My older sister, her and her fiance made a special trip home to Eastern Oregon so he could ask my dad for permission to marry my sister. Back to Disney, fairy tale princess. It's like, I thought that was so romantic, so wonderful. And I'm this tomboy that's, and relationships and love is just kind of, because I didn't love me. I was afraid of that. And that's one thing that I liked about my husband before we got married is, I think this is going to be safe. He's not going to push past my boundaries and my, and I didn't even have boundaries as a, but it's like, I know he's not going to ask too much of me in a relationship. You know what I mean? He's not going to want that, a connection that I'm not comfortable with.
Okay, connection. Yeah, I'm like, that's ironic. He's not going to want too much of me because once we're in deep, right, with the narcissist, it's always our fault and they want everything of us. But the
Well,
connection, like you guarded your heart up from that vulnerable connection.
I guarded my heart from the time I was an infant. And, from being born with all of that sad, before I was born with that sadness flooding me. But it's just like these relationships I wasn't really comfortable with. And I knew he wasn't going to. I think a subconscious, I knew he wasn't going to really deeply love me and expect me to love him back like that. And so it felt safe. And what felt safe was so unsafe. It's just really so ironic. But
And I think the old-fashionedness of asking for hand in marriage, yes, like all the young gals and even my generation, and you kind of resisted that, but you also thought it was romantic. I don't know if it's so much a Disney movie. I just feel like it's respectful. And yes, it's old-fashioned, but at least it's like I respect the family you came from. I respect you. I'm not going to isolate you because I do respect them. Like it just shows like a bit of an extra step of respect.
and see, this is hilarious that you bring up respect, because his whole issue with me is I don't respect him. One of his issues. And I told you I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a ranch in Eastern Oregon. He would come to that place and see me before we got married. And I've got two younger sisters that are 10 and 12 years younger than me. So they're still at home. They're out driving the tractors, working on the farm. And one day, we're supposed to, I'm sorry, I feel like I'm laughing at my own jokes. But we're going to go home one day, you know, one weekend, I don't know, family reunion or whatever it is. And what do we do? And so, you know, we're going to go. And he gets so mad and indignant. And it's like, how can you expect me to go there? Do you know how bad I feel and how stupid I feel when you've got these younger sisters that can drive these tractors and I can't drive tractors or anything? They make me look so bad. Uh-huh. It's like, where'd that come from?
That's such a great classic example of narcissists being insecure. Like, I think a lot of people don't realize still that narcissists deep down are insecure.
Oh,
they
wounded.
Put off a really good front, but they are insecure.
Yes. And he always said, I didn't respect him. And we go home. He's been there many times. And then all of a sudden, the fact that my sisters can drive tractors and he can't is a problem. It's like, well, I can drive tractors and you can't. Why is that not a problem? But he would always say, you don't respect me. You don't respect me. And I was thinking, you know, well, when you're out there at work and I'm in school studying and I offer to drive 15 miles to bring you dinner because you have to work late. And you say, oh, no, don't worry about it. It's like, well, I can just study while you're work. I want to be with him. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that. And all these things that I try to do to show love and respect, he could not receive. And then it occurred to me, it's like, oh, there's not enough respect in planet Earth for him to feel respected because he can't receive that.
Yes. And probably that's a childhood wound for him. And he hasn't healed that to even respect himself, right? Like you just said, if we're our own heroes inside for us as victims, it's also the path for the narcissist to heal himself inside.
Yes.
Yeah.
A very dysfunctional, I think his dad's a narcissist. Mm-hmm. He's got great hatred for his dad. His mom passed away before we ever met. And I'm very sorry for that. And his, there's a whole lot of mess there, but that's what it was about is he was so wounded and so lacking self-confidence and so afraid of anyone seeing his weakness. And that's the problem is once you get to know a narcissist, then you see their weakness and they have to destroy you so that at their weakest, they're still better than you.
Exactly.
And he was very successful at that. And, you know, what was interesting is, you know, I heard a person talking about another family member and it's like, oh yeah, since this happened, it's like, you could see that little twinkle, that light in his eye kind of go out. And that little twinkle he used to have in his eye was not there anymore. And it's like, my thought is like, well, what in the heck do you think's happened to me? Have you not seen the blackness come over me?
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. And what was hard is when I was, you know, try to talk to people, because I didn't talk about my problems. Because a lot of it is because I'm so ashamed and embarrassed about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I commend you for being so open in your book.
Mm.
And it's only in being open and transparent that we can help other people. And there's so much of your book that is so not my life and not my experience. But the end effect is, and the result
Right.
is so much. It's like, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. I experienced this kind of abuse, not the way you did, but it's still the same abuse. Just a different flavor of ice cream, basically.
It's all
But
different flavors, right? Because each person's unique in their flavor and trauma and issues and struggles.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's hard because I was told, it's like, well, he's a good provider. And I've got this autistic child, and because of his autism and his needs, I'm not able to work. So I've got no income or very little income.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you're not easy to live with either. Okay. Nice.
Thanks, but that was a deflection. What responsibility are you going to take in this part? Crickets,
no,
crickets.
Yeah, no, that was from one of my family members.
Oh, that was from one of your family members, right?
Telling me that I'm difficult to live with too, so how can I judge him and divorce him because I'm difficult too?
Oh my gosh.
And it's like, okay. And it's like in the moment, because for so many years I've not had a voice. And I'm getting a voice back, and then I'm also getting a measure of wisdom, and it's like, probably not a good time to say anything right now. And so a lot of times I don't, and I still feel like in many instances that I still have to prove that I'm worthy to be loved. And if
it's
I say
deep
too much
programming.
Deep programming. And, you know, we've talked about complex PTSD. The thing of it is this whole time I was seeing a counselor for like a lot of times, 10, 12 years. And then she retired, and it was perfect because it was like right at the time the divorce was done. And the whole time I was seeing her, like for the first year, I couldn't even talk about anything. And then I started seeing this other counselor that does EMDR work. And it's like, yes. And she says, and we started seeing her in like September, October. And she goes, well, let's get you in here and get this done before the roads turn bad, because we live up in North Idaho and, you know, November. So the roads get bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been through two seasons of bad roads because complex PTSD takes a long time to heal. Because that programming is so deep. Do I still see my counselor? Yes, I'm going there now. I mean, as soon as we get done, that's where I'm going. But I am so much better. And because of the work that I've done, the books that I've read, the coaching I've had, and the coaching I've done on myself, I'm making progress. And you and I talking is evidence of that.
Yeah.
And one thing that's really, I've discovered that the road to success is paved with failure. Because I've had failure after failure after failure after failure. And a lot of it is related to this complex PTSD, because part of me feels like, yes, I can do this. This is what we're made for. And then the 5-year-old in me goes, no. We're not doing that. That's not safe. We don't want to bother those people. They might get mad at us. And all of that early programming from before I had language and pre-verbal language, not pre-verbal, but pre-verbal trauma is very hard to deal with.
Because it's in your nervous system. It's in your body.
Yes. And with complex PTSD, that is trauma that goes on and on and on. And that's what makes it complex, and it can be healed, but it takes a lot longer. And through somatic movement and this coaching modality that I've learned about, and breath work and that kind of stuff, the healing can happen. And that's what I'm in process of getting certified to be a yoga instructor. And I've had some traumatic yoga training already. And there are, I mean, we all know what yoga is, but there are certain movements that calm the vagus nerve. And what's interesting is you can be in fight or flight, or you can be in this freeze shutdown mode. And that's where I have been. It is so hard to get energy to do anything. But through different breathing techniques, doing supplements, and this is where it gets crazy. I know what I need to do to take care of myself. And sometimes it's just taking supplements, but it's really hard to do that because I'm not worthy to be taken care of. And
it's gotta go to the root, like why even take them?
Yes. And then what I found is I've been getting these massages. And then part of the reason I go to get the massage is because my business helps support her. She's become my friend. So now I'm helping my friend. And if that's what you have to do to get an accountability partner, because I will do things for anybody else that I won't do for me.
Right.
And that's all part of that complex PTSD.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, and it's, you got to incorporate that into every, I do, but in incorporating that into my life, I'm also taking care of me. And I see your little banner. What's the heart work approach?
So let's do the heart work approach before we say goodbye to everybody.
It is this modality of coaching I use. It's I was trained by this gal who developed this process, and it's a very unique. And it's very powerful. And it involves doodling. And what you do is you do the very simple, basic draw you on the page. And when you see yourself on the page, and I mean, it's just very, you know, stick figure type thing. And I mean, something simple like that.
Okay.
Just very simple. But when you see that little girl and you color her dress in your favorite color, you know it's you. You have compassion for her when you don't have compassion for yourself. When you see you on the paper as 3 years old or 5 years old or even before that, or you see yourself going through these situations, you learn to have compassion for yourself. And then what we do is we change the way we see the circumstance. And changing your perspective doesn't change the circumstance until it does. Because changing the way I looked at me in this relationship is what got me out of it.
Yeah.
Because I believed I couldn't get out until I believed I could. And once I believed I could, then I did. And that is where the power is at.
And that's where you become your own hero. That's where you raise, you rise your energy. You are your own Prince Charming.
Yes.
So Janet, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me at Heartwork Healing Coach, and that's my website. And I'm, if you want to email me, I'm Coach Janet at heartworkhealingcoach.com. And on the website, there's a couple buttons. One, if you just want to do an intake session with me and see what's going on, we can do that. It's complimentary. Or you can take our self-assessment quiz and kind of just kind of see where things are going at. And then after you take that quiz, you can also have a link to schedule a session with me. And you also will get some free affirmation cards. And these affirmation cards are fun because if you read them and they don't land, or they go on, ooh, that's not true, you know that's something you need to work on. And it's all a process. And it's a beautiful process. And it makes you more powerful and more whole when you work on you.
Yes, that's it. It is the process. Thank you so much for being here and bringing your wisdom, bringing your story, and really relating to the audience. I truly feel deeply connected to you, and I'm sure they do too.
Thank you. You're very welcome, and it's been fun to be here, and I can't tell you how much I have appreciated and enjoyed your book. I've listened to it at least 3 times.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Amazing. So yes, thank you.
Thank you for that encouragement as well, because there are some, I don't know, how do I say this? Dark entities trying to attack it. So thank you.
Oh yeah. Well, there's dark entities trying to attack because it brings people to light. And when you do good, you'll get pushback. So yeah, it's been very helpful to me. So thank you for writing that.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, stay here. We'll to the end, and I'll see you in just a second, Janet.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to this podcast. Please help us grow and reach more survivors that are seeking spiritual growth by sharing this and tagging me at Empath of the Narcissist Podcast on Instagram. You can even send it via text. However you want to share it, you go share away. And don't forget to subscribe. Hey, if you're feeling extra generous, please write a review to the podcast. This really does help in social proof. We're up to 100 reviews. I never thought I'd ever see that number. So thank you so much for that. So speaking of ads and offerings, you can dive deeper with me through my first book, Empath and the Narcissist. It is a profound exploration of my story, my healing journey, and a whole bunch of different elements that I've discovered on my healing path to help you heal from narcissistic abuse and empower you. So you can also listen to that on Audible. My second book is a new book, baby. It is Empath's Guide to Rising Strong. And you can grab your paperback of that human design guidebook. And as always, we'll see you tomorrow in an episode. Remember, always keep your unique light shining.